Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, April 15th, 2020. This is Section A. The front page headline reads, Railroad Commission Hears Views on Pro-Rationing. 55 People Speak During Virtual Meeting by Mella McEwen. For the first time since 1973, the possibility of Texas' three railroad commissioners enacting rules to limit the state's oil and gas production is a real possibility. Commission Chair Wayne Christian and Commissioners Christy Craddock and Ryan Sitton on Tuesday heard from 55 speakers who had signed up to offer their views for, against, or a neutral position on enacting cuts in an effort to help an energy industry reeling from dual demand and supply shocks. Praising the efforts of President Trump and Texas's members of Congress to entice other nations to cut production, Christian said, "The Railroad Commission has the power to reduce oil production. The president does not. This is a sobering responsibility we find ourselves holding today." Noting that the agency was charged with preventing the waste of the state's natural resources, Sitton repeatedly asked those speaking at the virtual meeting how they defined waste. "I believe there are supply-demand imbalances that exist at every point in time in the commodity cycle," said Lee Tillman, Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer of Marathon Oil Corporation. "If you describe that as waste, given fluctuations, the Railroad Commission would be very busy." Tillman, who was speaking in opposition to pro-rationing production, went on to point out that when oil prices fell in 2008 and 2015 because of excess production, the commission didn't declare that a waste and start to manipulate what a free market and an independent market in Texas and the U.S. Scott Sheffield, President and Chief Executive Officer of Pioneer Natural Resources, which partnered with Parsley Energy to request Tuesday's hearing, told the commissioners that in studying pro-rationing, he believed the commissioners were compelled to act, and if they don't take action, much of the industry will disappear. He said that they should be prepared to pro-ration longer than expected. He cited comments from a Pioneer board member who also sits on the board of a major airline, which has developed two scenarios. One, if there is a treatment for the coronavirus that reduces mortality to normal rates, airlines will fly at 50% capacity by the end of the year. If there is no treatment and mortality rates remain high until a vaccine is developed in the next 12 to 18 months, planes would be flying at a capacity of 10% or less through the end of 2021. Sheffield predicted there will be a second round of deep cuts that could involve not only Texas, but Oklahoma, North Dakota, and even the group of 20 developed nations. "I urge everyone to be prepared, do their homework, be prepared to implement cuts at a moment's notice." Matt Gallagher, President and Chief Executive Officer of Parsley Energy, called a pro-rationing move by the commission the next step in leadership after the OPEC Plus cuts last weekend, and stressed that the move would be temporary and with monthly reviews could end after just 30 days. "Uniform pro-ration will help extend the useful capacity of energy infrastructure and bring the industry back online," Gallagher said. "If Texas takes no action, we find ourselves with a single-digit oil prices, and Texas could lose up to 5 million barrels of production per day." Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, said his organization predicts a decline of 2.5 to 3 million barrels of oil per day in the U.S. before the end of this year, with more than 40% of that reduction coming from Texas with no government mandate. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, speaking in opposition, also argued that government intervention is not the answer, and the Texas operators already are responding by not drilling wells and shutting in existing production. Craddock raised the issue of the impact requiring producers to shut in wells would have on reservoirs. While Sheffield assured her Pioneer had shut in some wells for 6 months without damage, other speakers said individual operators know their wells, reservoirs, and economics better than a government entity and should be in control. Whether it's shutting in wells or forcing cutbacks, however it's happening, what will that do to our fields and reservoirs, she said. We want to ensure we're not damaging our reservoirs in the short to medium term. Both Craddock and Christian said enacting pro-rationing would put Texas at a disadvantage if it acts unilaterally. Both petitioners are Texas Permian producers only, Tillman said. They're single basin companies with no other production. Our company and other opponents of pro-rationing have production in other areas of Texas, in Oklahoma, New Mexico, and North Dakota. That gives us a broader perspective. Our decisions are not limited just to Texas, but we must consider which barrels across our portfolio have the most cash contributions. For Marathon, our South Texas Eagle Ford holdings give us some of the highest cash contributions. Going by market fundamentals, our Eagle Ford barrels would be the last barrels we would consider curtailing on an economic basis, he said. In this scenario, pro-rationing would eliminate our freedom to protect our most economic barrels by forcing us to curtail Eagle Ford production. There's an underlying perception that Texas barrels must be the least economic in a company's portfolio. That demonstrates how archaic pro-rationing is. Texas cannot be isolated, but is one participant in a much larger landscape. Doug Suttles, chief executive officer of Ovintiv, also opposing pro-rationing, told the commissioners he has worked all over the world. When we deploy our capital, we look at risk, whether there's a technical risk, geological risk, even regulatory risk. If Texas decides to prorate, we'll have to consider, if we invest there in the future, will we be able to produce those barrels and under what circumstances, he said. Mark Hauser, chief executive officer of University Lands, which manages 2.1 million West Texas acres for the University of Texas and Texas A&M Systems, testified he expects the number of rigs drilling on university lands to fall to 5 or 6 later in the year, and revenues to fall from $1 billion to $500 million, depending on oil prices next year as operators leave crude and natural gas in the ground. Still, he urged the commissioners to utilize pro-rationing as a tool to reduce the amount of natural gas being produced alongside crude oil, thus reducing or eliminating flaring and demonstrating the industry's commitment to the environment. This article is entitled, City Reports Three New Cases. Patients are two residents, employee of long-term care facility, from staff reports. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting an investigation on three new confirmed cases of coronavirus in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to 35. The 33rd confirmed case is a female in her 70s who was tested by Midland Health. The female is currently an inpatient at the hospital and was transported from Midland Medical Lodge on Friday, according to a press release. The source of exposure is contact to a known case. The 34th confirmed case is a female in her 30s who was tested by Midland Health. The female is currently an inpatient at the hospital. She was admitted on Sunday. The source of exposure is contact to known case. She is a part-time nurse. The last day she worked at the facility was March 29th. The 35th case is a female in her 80s who was tested by Midland Health. The female is currently an inpatient at the hospital and was transported from Midland Medical Lodge on Monday. The source of exposure is contact to a known case. The Health Department confirmed Tuesday that 4 administrative employees of Midland Medical Lodge are among the 35 confirmed cases in Midland, according to the release. The website describes Midland Medical Lodge as a long-term care facility. The Midland Medical Lodge has been following the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services guidelines for a nursing facility. The facility has been fully cooperating with the City of Midland Health Department and state regulatory agencies. The medical directors on site are screening residents every 4 hours and plan to test all that are symptomatic. The facility has created a licensed isolation wing to house any symptomatic residents. The administrative staff members who have tested positive are isolating at home. They will not return to work at the facility until they are released by the health department. Midland Medical Lodge implemented the use of masks and gloves for resident contact on March 30th, according to the release. All staff has been wearing full personal protective equipment for approximately 2 weeks. Midland Medical Lodge has not allowed any visitors since mid-March. The City of Midland will continue to monitor the individuals and the facility in accordance with the CDC. This article is entitled Documenting Coronavirus. Museum of the Southwest Starts Pandemic Documentation Project by J.C. Lewis. The Museum of the Southwest has started the Pandemic Documentation Project to collect people's experiences during this unprecedented time. The idea came about when museum staff were discussing how people would be able to make it through this time without the arts. Christine Eck, Director of Community Engagement, said people are consuming more art during this time than normal. People are reading books, people are watching Netflix, and people are listening to music, and are being inspired to create their own art, she said. She said this project can be beneficial to help people make sense of what they're going through. To document that in an arts-related manner, it's really a primary source document, she said. An essay or photos, drawings, however they express that. And it's just something the museum can use for the future to have a snapshot of this time. X said the museum shouldn't be just a building with objects. It's a reflection of our community and society. Right now, we feel is obviously an important moment in history we're living in. Anybody living in West Texas, from medical workers to grocery store workers to students, is encouraged to submit, she said. People don't have to be talented in any particular art form. It's more about how people want to express themselves. You are a human being experiencing this moment in history, she said. Arts encompass a lot of things, not what we normally or typically think about an artist. We're more interested in what people are experiencing, so that in the future, people will look back at this and say, wow, that's what this was like. Submissions opened on Friday, and a number were received over the weekend, X said. Instructions for the project, in English and Spanish, are posted on the museum's website. X said that when the project ends, the museum will share the submissions, but the format hasn't been decided. We're going to see how this plays out, she said. Some of the ideas we have, if it will be an exhibition someday, either formal, or if we will start sharing things in small pieces online, we're not entirely sure. Eck said that during this difficult time, this project can provide an outlet and hope. It's hopefully, because it expresses that we'll get through it, something we can look back on, she said. This article is entitled Midland Memorial Hospital Medical Officer Calls for Same Level of Vigilance by Stuart Doreen. There have been 4 confirmed cases of coronavirus in Midland County during the last 5 days. The number of confirmed cases that have completed isolation or have recovered is around 69%. However, Midland Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson is urging residents of Midland County to continue to take the pandemic seriously. Wilson said Tuesday, "That's what Midland County residents are going through is a slow burn compared to the gasoline fire being experienced elsewhere." That includes 814 tests and 32 confirmed cases in Midland County, 631 tests conducted and 46 confirmed cases in Ector County, 986 tests conducted and 39 confirmed cases in Tom Green County, San Angelo, 1,028 tests conducted and 68 confirmed cases in Taylor County, Abilene, 3,376 tests conducted and 317 confirmed cases in Lubbock County. There's a lot of activity and talk across the nation, from the president, governors, our mayor, about when we can start our economic engines again and when we get businesses moving again, Wilson said. And I want to be a little bit of a baffle to that, if I may, in the context that the reason that we're in the position to have these conversations is because of exactly what we've been doing. The social distancing, increased hygiene, etc., have made a difference in the way that disease spreads. But still remember, there are a lot of things that have not changed. It's a very highly transmissible virus. It's got a very high likelihood of spreading from individual to individual when you're in close proximity to one another. It also has a higher lethality than many other viruses that we experience on a seasonal basis, such as the flu. And because of that, we must maintain some level of vigilance and care, no matter how we move forward. Wilson said Midland is not in the same position as some or other urban centers across the nation, where the population densities are greater and the risk of transmission is much higher. In Harris County, Houston area, there have been 3,747 confirmed cases, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. The top five counties are Dallas County, with 1,788 cases, Tarrant County, Fort Worth, has 867, Travis County, Austin, has 856, and Bexar County, San Antonio, has 794. Midland County was tied for 45th across Texas on Tuesday. Other notes from the Tuesday morning meeting of the United Command Team press conference: when asked about when antibody tests will be available in Midland, Wilson said, "I wish it were yesterday. It would make a huge difference for us. I'm hoping within the month. It seems like they always get pushed back because there's so much demand, and Midland is not a high demand area," he said. This article is entitled "Texas Tech Psychiatrists Offer Free Support Group for Health Workers" by Caitlin Randall. Psychiatrists with Texas Tech University have created a free support group for local healthcare workers on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. "The group meets daily over Zoom to follow social distancing guidelines," said Dr. Bobby Jane with Texas Tech, who leads the group. He said the attendees are mostly made up of staff from Midland Memorial Hospital, but the group is open to workers at Medical Center Hospital, Odessa Regional Medical Center, and other healthcare providers as well. "We know that frontline healthcare workers are struggling with unique stressors the general public might not understand or appreciate as much," Jane said. He said some of those stressors include the intensity of working with COVID-19 wards, anxiety that they might become infected or infect family members, the emotional stress from losing patients, and the stress of knowing some patients won't survive the illness. "The long-term effects of working on the front lines during a pandemic can include depression, burnout, and post-traumatic stress disorder," Jane said. Fatima Motawala, a second-year resident at Texas Tech, said the group offers an outlet and teaches workers techniques to decrease anxiety, including breathing techniques. She said focus on the positives, such as the patients who have recovered, can also help workers alleviate stress. "Unfortunately, a lot of the media is focusing on the negative aspects of this pandemic. But there are also cases who have recovered," she said. "So I think it's best to look at the positive aspects." Motawala said employees can learn to change their perspectives in the morning to set a more positive outlook for the rest of the day. "Do what you can to protect yourself and your family. Take all the precautions," she said. "But at the end of the day, you have to remember that a lot of anxiety is not going to benefit anyone." Jane said he worries a stigma against seeking psychiatric help, even among those in the healthcare community, may prevent some from receiving the treatment they need. He said workers likely will experience more stress as the wave of patients slows down when the adrenaline wears off and is replaced with fatigue. "A concern I have is that many of our healthcare professionals may not realize the stress they are going through," he said. "Meeting over Zoom can help combat this stigma," Jane said, "because it offers meeting attendees some level of anonymity. Users can disable their cameras and choose any name as their username." Those who have sought the help of the support group have complained of insomnia, nightmares, and a fear of all that is still unknown about the virus, Jane said. When you see other countries struggling to keep up with patients coming in, there is an uncertainty about it, he said. Being on the edge, will we be the next hotspot? Employees have also expressed concerns over personal safety issues and not knowing if they could be exposed by a colleague who might be infected, he said. Jane said he expects the group will continue past the initial crisis as more healthcare workers seek help to process their experiences. We'll continue it as long as it takes, he said. The group meets from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. daily. The Zoom link is available to workers through their employers. This article is entitled, Ector County Reports 23 Recovered, 1 Positive Case, from Staff Reports. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia said during a Zoom meeting conference Tuesday that 23 people have recovered from coronavirus in Ector County. Ector County Health Department reported that 516 tests have come back negative and 69 tests are still pending. They have tested 631 people, 87 private lab tests, and 546 public lab tests. More than 600 people have been contacted through ECHD for contact tracing, Garcia said. Medical Center Health System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH is treating 4 positive patients at the hospital, with 3 in critical care on ventilators and 1 on the isolation floor. MCH is also treating 15 persons under investigation, with 2 in critical care and 13 on the isolation floor. The hospital has administered 257 tests, with 27 being positive, 206 negative, and 24 tests still pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC is treating the 3 persons under investigation, and the 1 confirmed coronavirus patient was discharged Tuesday. ORMC has tested 119 people with 9 positive tests, 107 negative tests, and 3 tests are still pending. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons and ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said the hospitals are looking at coronavirus antibody testing. It could be 2 to 3 more weeks for MCH to get testing, Timmons said. Saravanan said he is hoping that it will be within days that they can start antibody testing as a send-out test to labs. And ORMC is also trying to get a machine to start doing the testing at the hospital. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said the Ector County Commissioner's Court will be having an emergency meeting on Friday about drive-through testing implementation in the county. Ector County by the numbers. Confirmed cases 46. Days since the first case was confirmed 18. By gender, male 11, female 27. Age group 0 to 19, 0. 20 to 29, 7. 30 to 39, 9. 40 to 49, 8. 50 to 59, 14. 60 to 69, 6. And 70 to 79, 1. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, April 15th, 2020. Arthur Frederick Westman. On a cold night, January 28th, 1933, a young farmer in the small German community of Avery, Oklahoma, saddled his horse and rode to a neighbor's home to ask her to assist his wife in childbirth. That night, Arthur Frederick Westman was born to Arthur Diedrich Westman and Ida Wolf Westman. He went to be with his Heavenly Father early Sunday morning, April 12, 2020, in Brookhaven, Mississippi. Humble immediately sent their new geophysicist to work on a seismic crew based out of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. While working there, he met a beautiful Southern belle from Brookhaven, Mississippi, named Nan Lee. They were married December 9, 1956, and were blessed to celebrate 63 years together. Art and Nan were blessed with 2 children who survive him, Michael Westman and his daughter Kathy of Midland, and Melissa Lee Westman of Norman, Oklahoma. In addition to his adoring wife Nan, he is survived by their 4 granddaughters and 6 great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his sister Nelda and husband Willard Johnson of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and a large number of nieces, nephews, and cousins and their families. He was preceded in death by his parents, his brother Melvin Westman, and his wife Dorothy, a nephew Jeffrey Johnson, and sister-in-law Betty Johnson. A private graveside service in New Salem Church of Christ near Brookhaven, Mississippi, is planned for Thursday, April 16th at 10 a.m. Honorary pallbearers are nephews Ron Westman, Phil, Mark, and Brian Johnson, Carter Lee and his grandsons Travis Bow, Derek Nichols, Tyler Garner, and Austin Wilson. Riverwood Family Funeral Service is in charge of the arrangements. A memorial service in Midland will be planned at some point in the future. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials be directed to Children's Heart Center, Texas Children's Heart Center, in support of their new Fontan Clinic benefiting children with congenital heart defects. Art's great-granddaughter will be one of the many children receiving care from this new clinic, and Art would welcome you joining his family in its support. Donations may be sent in memory of Art Westman to Texas Children's Office of Philanthropy, Suite 5214, P.O. Box 300630, Houston, Texas, 77230, or online at www.give.texaschildrens.org/go-to/art, or the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, P.O. Box 4486, Houston, Texas, or online at mdanderson.org/gifts. Please donate in memory of Art Westman in the memo line, or a charity of your choice. If you would like to leave a word of sympathy to the family, you may do so at www.riverwoodfamily.com. Juan Miguel Trevino. Juan Miguel Trevino, 26, of Midland, passed away Thursday, April 9, 2020. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his parents, Rachel Lara Zuniga and Adam Trevino. One sister, Denine Trevino, five brothers, Manuel Trevino, Andy Trevino, Abraham Trevino, Adam Trevino Jr., Elijo Trevino, and grandparents Belinda Ramirez and Joe Trevino. Ronald Ronnie Hodges. Ronald Ronnie Hodges, 66, of Midland, went home to be with the Lord on Easter Sunday, April 12, 2020. Private graveside ceremony will be held at Fairview Cemetery. Celebration of life will be held at Bellevue Baptist Church in Midland at a later date due to current gathering restrictions. He is survived by his wife, Rita Hodges, daughter Vicky Hodges, two brothers, and two sisters. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Thomas Lawrence Hargis. Thomas Lawrence Hargis, 54, of Midland, passed away on April 5, 2020, in Midland. Thomas was born on October 23, 1965. No services had been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 15th. Couple reunite after COVID-19 scare. The story was written by Royal McGregor. As Claudia Monclova was wheeled out of Odessa Regional Medical Center on Tuesday evening, she was accompanied by her husband, Enrique Monclova, as the two received cheers from the hospital's medical staff. Claudia Monclova, age 50, tested positive for coronavirus about 3 weeks ago, which forced her and her husband to communicate strictly through phone calls or FaceTime. At about 7 p.m. Tuesday evening, Claudia Monclova was released from ORMC after her second straight negative test for coronavirus. She had a few words to members of the media who were waiting for her in the parking lot. Quote, "I went through hell But now I'm here, she said. I was given another chance. End quote. Enrique Monclova, age 51, spoke with the Odessa American early Tuesday morning, and he explained it was a good day because he received word that his wife was going to be released from ORMC. That's a far cry from the feelings he felt 3 weeks ago when his wife tested positive for coronavirus. Quote, when I got the news that she was positive for coronavirus, I was devastated, he said. It was very heartbreaking. I was thinking of the worst things that could happen. I was comforted by a lot of friends and family. There were a lot of prayers. End quote. Enrique Monclova also admitted during the phone interview that a week ago he was in fear that he would lose his wife of 7 years. Despite being put on a ventilator, Claudia Monclova was able to pull through. Enrique Monclova credits the tireless work from medical professionals at ORMC. Claudia Monclova also works in the medical field as an X-ray technician and sonographer. Quote, there were so many people behind us, he said. There was so much faith and so much prayer. That's what kept everybody going and brought my wife to where she's at. End quote. Though she was released from the hospital, Claudia Monclova still has to go through physical therapy to regain strength and her muscles that haven't been in use since she was confined to a bed. Enrique Monclova said his wife was diagnosed with influenza A and influenza B, an ear infection, and bronchitis prior to testing positive for coronavirus. However, he said prior to those rash of illnesses, his wife didn't have any underlying conditions. Quote, anything before this, she was healthy as a horse, he said about his wife. As of Tuesday afternoon, Ector County Health Department website details there have been 46 confirmed cases of coronavirus, with 23 people recovered. Ector County numbers reflect only residents of Ector County who have tested positive or negative or died here. The numbers do not reflect those non-residents who have tested positive or negative or died. ORMC has had 2 deaths and MCH has had 1 death. However, the Ector County chart details only 2 deaths due to the fact that one of the people who died was a non-resident. There have also been 631 people tested, 516 negative results, and 69 pending lab results. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said during Tuesday's daily press conference between Medical Center Hospital, ORMC, and other agencies in Ector County that most patients recovering from coronavirus are going through physical and respiration therapy. Quote, at the time of discharge, there is some rehab that most of these COVID patients will require just because of the sheer number of days they spend in a hospital bed not moving around, Sarah Vannon said. To get their normal strength back, they need a little bit of rehabilitation physical therapy. That's something we will arrange as well. End quote. About 3 weeks after she tested positive for coronavirus, Claudia Monclova was wheeled out of ORMC and received a standing ovation from medical personnel. The celebration took place Tuesday night on the West Campus main entrance of ORMC. During the span when his wife was in the hospital, Enrique Monclova said he has called medical professionals at ORMC morning, noon, and night. He also said her doctor, Dr. Kevar Dar, would update him every 2 days. Quote, I was staying in very close contact with the nurses that were taking care of her, Enrique Monclova said. Enrique Monclova said he hasn't been tested for the coronavirus. He explained the Ector County Health Department told him to self-isolate for a week unless he showed symptoms. Enrique Monclova followed those orders and never showed symptoms. Quote, "They recommended me to stay home if I didn't have any symptoms," he said. Rapid tests on the way. The story was written by Michael Merlo. The good news is rapid COVID-19 tests are on the way, but are in short supply. During Tuesday's virtual hospital briefing, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Rohit Saravanan said Cepheid testing machines have been ordered and they hope to get them this week or next. Quote, "Those tests are in short supply, and if we do get them, our mandate will be to use it for the highest of highest risk patients, which is those people that are hospitalized with COVID-19 disease," end quote. He said the rapid tests wouldn't be available widely to the public yet until they get enough supplies to be able to test widely. "Those needed supplies," Saravanan said, "are related to the rapid test cartridge shortage." Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia reported that Ector County has 46 confirmed cases, 516 negative, 69 pending, and has tested a total of 631. "There have been 23 recoveries," she said, "and that there are 2 deaths in Ector County. There have been 3 deaths in Ector County hospitals, but only 2 of those patients were Ector County residents, and the health department only records COVID-19 statistics for Ector County residents." Garcia said contact tracers have reached out to over 600 people. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that MCH has 4 positive patients in the hospital, 3 of which are on ventilators in the CCU, and 1 is on another COVID-19 designated floor. He said that there are 15 persons under investigation, 2 of which are in the CCU, and the other 13 are on the other designated floor. Tippin added that they have tested 257 people, 27 have been positive, 206 negatives, and 24 are pending. ORMC President Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has tested 119 people, 9 have been positive, and 107 have been negative, and 3 pending. ORMC has 3 persons under investigation, she said. One patient was a confirmed positive, but was released on Tuesday night. Saravanan said that there are specific types of guidance for patients with respiratory systems on ventilators. He said that patients are turned on their stomach, which opens up more lung volume for air. He said at the time of discharge, there is a rehab that most COVID-19 patients require because of their immobility. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that the 2 patients infused with COVID-19 convalescent plasma are still in critical condition. Both hospitals reported they were waiting on labs to receive equipment for antibody testing, which could detect antibodies that are produced after a patient has become infected with the virus. County Commissioner Dale Childers said that the county will give an update on the drive-through testing at an emergency meeting on Friday. With a surge still to come, Tippin said that they are looking for more avenues to get protective equipment and that they are trying to make sure patients and staff are protected for when that surge hits. He added that N95 masks, surgical masks, gowns, and ventilators are high on the list. Saravanan said that in addition to supplies is personnel, and that those who have been furloughed from hospitals may be called at any time to come back to help if there is a surge. Garcia said that the reason Midland is showing more testing is because of their drive-through, and that she was told they are still following CDC guidelines. Tippin said that it's important to know that Ector County has performed appropriate testing and that, quote, we have seen the test results in the number of positives we have versus the number of negatives and positives in other communities, he said. In an email, Sarah Vannon said that there is broad information on risk factors. He wrote that for heart disease alone, quote, someone with pre-existing heart disease who becomes ill with COVID-19 may suffer a heart attack or develop congestive heart failure. This rapid worsening of cardiovascular health is likely due to a combination of the severe viral illness and its increased demands on the heart. Fever causes rapid heart rate, for example, compounded by low oxygen levels due to pneumonia and increased propensity for blood clot formation. In addition to the increase in these heart problems, a more unusual condition called myocarditis has been observed in COVID-19 patients. End quote. County OKs hiring freeze. Commissioners also approve roadwork contracts. Ector County Commissioners Tuesday enacted a hiring freeze for most departments and okayed three big road construction contracts financed by the new 1.25-cent sales tax. Human Resources Director Pat Patton won approval of the freeze, except for the essential departments of health, information technology, the detention center, the sheriff's office, the medical examiner's office, and emergency management related to the COVID-19 pandemic. After a lengthy discussion, Patton was also authorized by a unanimous 5-0 vote to pay overtime to employees in the crucial groups. County Judge Debbie Hayes said health workers in recent weeks had contacted more than 600 people who could have been exposed to COVID-19, and Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said they'd been working 6 or 6.5 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day. Quote, we're going to burn them out, physically and emotionally, Childers said. The court also approved contracts with Danny's Asphalt Paving for $1.5 million to pave and improve drainage on West Pawpaw Street, and for $2.5 million to resurface West 42nd Street from Highway 302 and Loop 338 to FM 1936. Tierra Lease Service won a $1.1 million contract for 2020 seal coating. Dr. Timothy Benton, Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, attended the 10 a.m. meeting to discuss possible COVID-19 testing, but was told by Hayes that he would have to come back because his item was not on the agenda, or they could call a special meeting before the next regularly scheduled meeting. During a Tuesday afternoon Zoom news conference, Childers said Benton was accidentally left off the agenda and that the court will hold an emergency session on Friday for Benton's update on drive-through testing centers. The court also okayed a $1.8 million budget amendment to pay for booking and intake area renovations at the jail, accepted a certificate of substantial completion for the $20 million jail additions and renovations project, whose general contractor was Cooper Construction, approved a contract with Summit Food Service for the Juvenile Probation Department, accepted a proposal for Axon Enterprise of Scottsdale, Arizona, to license 16 officers to use body cameras and interview rooms with Sheriff Mike Griffiths saying the Texas Department of Criminal Justice had stopped accepting new inmates, and adding, quote, "It will stack us up some, but I think we'll be fine," end quote. Approved budget amendments for $125,000 for medical contract services at the jail, $800,000 for inmates' drugs and medical expenses, and $925,000 for the medical fees. Restricted employees' use of intermittent leave, primarily for child care, to no more than four-hour increments under the Emergency Family Medical Leave Expansion Act. Approved United Fire and Casualties request for a contract update. Okay to grant for the Easy Rider bus system. Approved hiring a welder for the Highways and Streets Department. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County confirmed cases, 46. Ector County negative, 516, out of 631 tested, with 69 pending. Two deaths. Midland County, 33 confirmed, out of 893 tested, two deaths. Texas, 14,624 confirmed, with 146,467 tested. Total Texas deaths, 318. U.S. cases, 579,005 total confirmed, and 22,252 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County confirmed cases, 46. Ector County negative, 516, out of 631 tested, with 69 pending. Two deaths. Midland County, 33 confirmed, out of 893 tested, two deaths. Texas, 14,624 confirmed, with 146,467 tested. Total Texas deaths, 318. U.S. cases, 579,005 total confirmed, and 22,252 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site. Parks info. The City of Odessa has released a list of park amenities that are currently closed to the public due to the COVID-19 pandemic until further notice. Community buildings, Floyd Quinn Gym, auditorium, picnic pavilions, playgrounds, restrooms, tennis courts, basketball courts, baseball fields, softball fields, soccer fields, volleyball courts, skate park, disc golf course, Comanche Trails Park fishing pond. Also, walking trails are open, and open turf areas of parks are open. There are no organized sports activities or practice or play. A parent tossing or kicking a baseball, soccer ball to his or her kid is okay. No assembly of more than 10 people in the turf areas of the parks. This is Odessa American Quick Hits. Apply for vacancy. City Council officials are asking interested residents from District 1 to submit their name for consideration of appointment to District 1 until November 2020. Currently, there is a vacancy in District 1. The City Council will accept applications until the deadline at 5 p.m. on Monday. The following requirements must be met in order to be considered. You must be a United States citizen, 18 years of age or older, not convicted of a felony, resided continuously in the state for 12 months, resided in District 1 for 6 months, registered to vote in the district for 6 months, not been determined totally or partially mentally incapacitated by final judgment of a court interview will take place during council work session at 10 a.m. Tuesday. Appointment will take place during city council meeting on April 28th at 6 p.m. Applications will be available through the city secretary's office. Contact the city secretary at cs@odessa-tx.gov or call 335-3276 for information and the application.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 15th, 2020. Parts of Section A. New OC Vice President of Instruction takes on new world of education by Ruth Campbell. Odessa College's new Vice President of Instruction, Tremaine Anderson, left West Texas for the big city once, but is glad she's back. She's also arrived at an unprecedented time in history with the COVID-19 pandemic. An Andrews native who grew up in Big Spring, Anderson was Assistant Director of Instructional Assessment and an Instructor of History at Tarrant County College District before coming to OC. Tarrant County has 6 campuses, almost 80 to 90,000 students. That's including online, so it's almost like its own little university system, but it's just a really big community college, Anderson said. Its main office is in downtown Fort Worth. Altogether, Anderson has been in education for 13 to 14 years. She said it is a strange time to start a new position, but the circumstances are what they are. I'm just happy to be a part of a smaller system and to be with the leaders that I'm working with because we're learning from each other. All of us in higher ed are learning about this process as we're going along, so none of us are experts yet. So I think this is a good place for me, Anderson said. Impressed with the college's continual high rankings from the Aspen Institute in the Aspen Prize competition, Anderson was further drawn to OC because every person she met during the hiring process was genuine about wanting to be the best community college in the nation. I saw that modeled, and people from facilities to an administrative assistant that could actually talk about the Aspen Prize and how they wanted to win and what that meant to the college. That is the nature of how everyone talked about it. Then I definitely wanted to be a part of an institution that was that way, Anderson said. She earned a bachelor's degree in history from the University of North Texas in Denton, a master's in history from University of Texas Permian Basin, and her doctorate in education from Capella University. She thought she might become a teacher, but never saw herself completing a doctorate. Like most Permian Basin families, hers is in oil and gas, so it's a big deal that she's gone as far as she has. Her first instructional experience was teaching a U.S. History Survey course at UTPB as a graduate student. From there, I didn't really have any idea that I would go and be a college professor or anything of that nature. But once I started to teach that first class, I knew that's what I wanted. Instruction was something that I was interested in, Anderson said. She thought she might become a teacher, but never saw herself completing a doctorate. Like most Permian Basin families, hers is in oil and gas. My background is instruction through and through. I was a college professor, community college professor in U.S. history, all the survey courses. I decided back in 2012 to move into administration because I wanted to see how everything worked. I was so interested in how a college worked and community college, so I made the leap, starting in 2012, to look at administration and how I would fit in that whole spectrum. And I haven't gone back since, she said. Her goal, as with OC, is to continue to work toward excellence. We have OC Global that's doing a wonderful job with how we transition from our classes through this pandemic from face-to-face to online, and just to grow that aspect so we can be known for our global community and our global learning. So that's really a goal that I'm set on now, to move that forward in a good direction, Anderson said. She noted that the college was already set up for online learning and is one of the best she's seen. As part of Odessa College's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, the college has issued an emergency pause for all students in courses with on-campus labs. Effective April 3rd, all on-campus labs were suspended until further notice for students enrolled in courses on or after March 23rd. Courses with labs that will be affected by the emergency pause are radiologic technology, agriculture science, instrumentation, electronics, auto and diesel technology, industrial technology, welding, culinary arts, and cosmetology, a news release said. Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness, Don Wood, said with the face-to-face classes they are still at a particular time, but the place has changed to home and the instruction is provided at a distance. The faculty has plans in place. Like we said, the learning continues didactic, online, remote, and with the instructor working with those students, and they have plans, completion plans, already for those students on looking at their competency and their skill level, where those students are at. So we see it as a positive because we're talking about marketable skills and keeping up with the market or keeping up with the industry they're going into and prepared for the workforce, Anderson said. So far, she has loved being at OC. Her first instructional experience was teaching a U.S. History Survey course at UTPB as a graduate student. From there, I didn't really have any idea that I would go and be a college professor or anything of that nature. But once I started to teach that first class, I knew that's what I wanted. Instruction was something that I was interested in, Anderson said. Although she hasn't had much contact with students because courses have moved online, Anderson said they are very positive. Many of them have said they are ready to come back and they're wanting things to go back to normal. She added that there is a board in the Learning Resource Center that students have written on saying when this is over, they're going back to a certain class or they want to see a certain person. Despite the challenging times, Anderson said this is a moment people can learn from. She is keeping a journal to chronicle the times. One thing people want to talk about is the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, how it started, and the consequences of it. After the Spanish flu came the Jazz Age, Wood said. America went crazy in celebrations of all kinds of things. She's absolutely right. Historically, we can anticipate a very different kind of world will come out of this. It will be different, Wood said. Anderson noted that every student at OC has been contacted multiple times. Wood said one thing OC has learned by having the drop rate improvement program in place since 2011 is together connections with instructors helps keep students in school. So we are strengthening our approach to connecting with students, and as a consequence, we have seen students do their best to stay in college, Wood said. We have very, very, very few students dropping out of college. They might cut back a class or two because of economics, but they're staying. So far, they've been staying in school and doing well. And one thing that will definitely be staying with us is that ramp up of connectivity to our students. We'll continue to ramp that up, Wood said. Asked what he thought of having Anderson on board, Wood said Anderson is a rare individual who comes into a totally different kind of higher education culture and immediately fits right in. She's part of our administrative team now. She's going up not only a steep learning curve about Odessa College, but she shares with us going up a learning curve of how to operate one of the best colleges, if not the best community college in the nation, at the same high level that we've always done. And she has been an absolute joy to work with, Wood said. She is the right person at the right time, and we are actually very thankful she chose to come to Odessa College. She's the one who made a big change coming from the big city back to her home, etc. But she came full of energy, full of passion, full of vision for helping maintain us at the high level of instructional excellence that we have come to expect, he added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.